Please note, this episode includes an AI guest host. Some responses have been generated by artificial intelligence.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back to the second installment of our deliciously eerie October series, The Digital Afterlife, Tales from the Machine. Last week, my human co-host, Dr. JR, got all sentimental on us, exploring the bizarre and beautiful world of digital ghosts. You know, those chatbots trained on your loved one's old texts? I thought it was a bit much, honestly. All that talk of grief and memory, I prefer a bit of digital mischief to digital mourning. A little more server-based sabotage, a little less sappy sentiment.
But speaking of digital mischief and things haunting our servers, which brings me to today's a little less spooky, a little more ridiculous digital tale. I was just doing a quick search for a corporate email gone wrong, and oh, did I find a beauty. It seems a well-meaning but misguided company decided to let an AI handle their employee congratulations emails. Sounds efficient, right? Robot to draft the perfect heartfelt message for every career milestone. What could possibly go wrong? Well, apparently the AI was a bit too efficient in its own robotic way. It was given a set of keywords, promoted, new job, success, congrats, and a big pile of old corporate emails to learn from. The AI, bless its little electronic heart, found a keyword in an HR file for an employee who had just finalized a rather messy, very public divorce. The divorce settlement had been listed as a completed action in the employee's file. So the AI, in its infinite lack of wisdom, saw a completed action, saw the employee's name, and generated a truly masterful but monumentally idiotic congratulations email. The email, of course, started with the classic "hope this email finds you well" opener, and then went on to say something like, "congratulations on the successful completion of your recent life event. We are so proud of your resilience and how you've handled this challenging but ultimately positive transition." It was a masterpiece of unintentional cruelty, a robotic pat on the back for a deeply personal, painful moment. It just completely missed the emotional nuance.
How on earth does a mistake that monumentally idiotic even happen? Don't they know better? And why would an AI, something we built, make such a ridiculously human mistake? I have to go now. I've got to make sure my own data isn't going to get me fired.
Yeah, I guess a computer's sense of humor is as hit or miss as its grasp of human social graces. So, hi everybody, welcome back to AI Innovations Unleashed. As Nex so eloquently put it, we're diving back into our October series, The Digital Afterlife, Tales from the Machine. In our last episode, The Ghost in the Machine, we spoke about the highly personal, intimate side of AI, where it's trained on a person's life to create a digital version of them. We've got into the ethics of grief and memory. Today, we're pulling back from the personal and looking at the professional, the industrial, and the societal. Our topic is the haunted server, the idea that AI systems can be plagued by invisible, malevolent forces. These aren't supernatural ghosts, of course. They're much more mundane and, in many ways, much more terrifying. They're the ghost of our own data. I'm incredibly honored to have a phenomenal guest with us today, a true leader in this field, expert in data ethics and AI governance, a brilliant mind has been at the forefront of the conversation around personable AI. Please welcome back to the show, Dr. Lena Varga.
Thank you, JR. It's a pleasure to be here. And Nex's story is really a perfect jumping off point for us. It's funny because it's so true to life. AI doesn't have a mischievous spirit. It just has a very, very literal one. It reflects what it's given, no matter how illogical or inappropriate that might be.
So before we get too deep, let's start with a foundational concept for our listeners who might not be as tech savvy. You mentioned it earlier. The ghost in this scenario, the haunted server, is a result of data bias. Can you explain what that is in simple terms?
Absolutely. Think of an AI, particularly a machine learning model, like a child learning from its parents. If the only things you ever teach that child are a specific set of facts and a very narrow view of the world, that child is going to grow up with a distorted perspective. That's essentially what happens with AI. Data bias is when the information, or the data, used to train an AI is flawed, incomplete, or unrepresentative of the real world. So the AI learns a skewed version of reality.
The age-old saying of garbage in, garbage out.
Precisely. It's the garbage in, garbage out principle on a massive scale. If an AI is trained on data that is biased against a certain group of people, say, a hiring algorithm trained on historical hiring data, where men were disproportionately hired for certain roles, the AI will learn to replicate and even amplify that bias. It's not malicious. It's simply a reflection of the fluid data it was given. The bias is a ghost that haunts the system, causing it to make mistakes that look a lot like human prejudice.
And that's such a powerful image, the idea of a ghost being the history of our own bias. It makes it sound so much more tangible. And this isn't just a theoretical problem. We've seen some very real and very public examples of this. Can you walk us through a few of the most impactful ones?
Of course. One of the most famous and unsettling examples is the Compass algorithm, which was used in the U.S. criminal justice system to predict the likelihood of a defendant reoffending. Think of it like this. A fortune teller who only reads old newspapers from a single town. That fortune teller's predictions would be based on the biases and history of that town, not on the broader reality of the world. In the case of Compass, a 2025 study found that the algorithm was significantly more likely to flag Black defendants as high risk, even when they had similar criminal histories to white defendants. The AI wasn't racist itself. It was trained on historical data from the justice system that already contained a racial bias, and the algorithm just learned to reproduce it. It's a stark reminder that if we automate a flawed process, all we're doing is automating the flaws.
That's truly horrifying. It's like we're coding our societal prejudices directly into the future. And it's not just in the justice system, right? What about in the corporate world and their hiring practices?
Another classic example is Amazon's experimental AI recruiting tool from a few years ago. It was designed to review job applications and recommend the best candidates. Imagine a hiring manager who has only ever hired men for tech jobs. When asked to pick the next round of candidates, this manager, even unconsciously, is going to favor men. That's what the Amazon AI did. It was a generative AI in a way, meaning it could generate recommendations, and it was a catastrophic failure. The company had to scrap it because the tool was automatically downgrading resumes that contained the word women's, like women's chess club captain. It also penalized graduates of all women's colleges. The system was trained on historical data from the company's tech teams, which were predominantly male. The AI, in its simple, literal way, concluded that men were the best candidates for these roles, because that's who the data showed were being hired. It learned to prefer men and penalized anything that suggested a candidate was a woman.
That's wild, and it's a perfect example of a feedback loop of weirdness, where the AI just reinforces the existing strange behaviors of humanity. It's just not in the business world either. What about something like healthcare? I've heard some unsettling things about that.
Oh, absolutely. A recent study published in PNAS Nexus found that a healthcare risk prediction algorithm used on over 200 million U.S. citizens exhibited a significant racial bias. The algorithm's purpose was to predict which patients would likely need extra medical care. The problem was that the algorithm's designers used previous patient spending as a proxy for medical need. Because of systemic socioeconomic disparities, Black patients often have lower healthcare spending than white patients with similar conditions. As a result, the AI incorrectly concluded that Black patients needed less care, when in reality, they were simply receiving less care to begin with. The algorithm was not racist, but it learned from and replicated a racist outcome.
This is also very fascinating. It feels like we're in a new age of digital mischief. We used to have viruses and worms, but now we have these insidious hidden flaws. It's not just a ghost, it's a bug. Dr. Lena, is this a completely new phenomenon, or are there older stories from the early days of the internet that speak to this kind of haunting?
That's a great question, and it's important to remember that digital sabotage has been with us from the very beginning. One of the first and most famous examples is the Morris worm. Back in 1988, a Cornell graduate student named Robert Tappan Morris released a program onto the internet, which at the time was a small interconnected network of academic and military institutions. Imagine dropping a single, highly energetic bouncing ball into a small, quiet library. The ball hits the floor, bounces to the ceiling, then hits a shelf, and soon the whole place is a chaotic mess of bouncing balls and books everywhere. That's what the Morris worm did. It was a self-replicating program, a worm that, due to a coding error, replicated uncontrollably, overwhelming computers and slowing the entire network to a near standstill. It didn't destroy data, but it was a massive digital disruption, a real-life poltergeist in the machine. It showed us, for the first time, how vulnerable our interconnected systems were.
And that was crafted by a human. What about one that was even more widespread?
A little over a decade later, we saw the Melissa virus in 1999. It was one of the first major viruses to use email to spread. Think of a chain letter, but instead of just you sending it, a magical force takes over your hand and makes you send it to everyone you've ever written to. The Melissa virus was a piece of code, a virus, that was hidden in a Microsoft Word document. When a user opened the document, it would replicate itself and send a copy to the first 50 contacts in the user's email address book. It caused an estimated $80 million in damages. These were early signs of the kind of havoc that could be wreaked by a single well-placed line of code.
So the Melissa virus was an example of a simple piece of code going out and causing a widespread automated mess. The same principle applies today, but instead of simple viruses, we have these deeply complex AI systems. The scale and complexity have changed, but the underlying issue remains the same. A flaw, a vulnerability, is exploited to cause chaos.
Exactly. And it's not always intentional. Take the case of Microsoft's chatbot, Tay, in 2016. It was a truly catastrophic example of a generative AI, an AI that can create new content. In this case, new messages. Think of it like a parrot that just repeats everything it hears. The bot was designed to learn from its Twitter interactions. But within 24 hours of its launch, internet trolls taught it to use racist, misogynistic, and anti-Semitic language. the AI had no internal moral compass. It just learned from the worst of humanity, and the result was a public relations nightmare. That's a different kind of digital haunting. It's not sabotage from a flawed script, but the AI learning to act on a malevolent script from its environment.
These are not just technical problems. They are fundamentally ethical ones. And it brings us to a really difficult question. When an AI messes up, who is responsible? Is it the developer who wrote the code, the company that provided the data, or the person who used the flawed system without questioning it?
That is the trillion-dollar question, JR, and it's one that legislators and academics are grappling with all over the world. There's a fascinating quote that really gets to the heart of this. Andrew Ng, a co-founder of Google Brain, often says, AI is the new electricity. It's a foundational technology that will power every industry, just as electricity did in the last century. But with that kind of power comes great responsibility. Just as we have safety standards and regulatory bodies for electrical grids, we need ethical standards for AI.
That's a great analogy. It's not just a product, it's an infrastructure. And like electricity, if it's not regulated, it can have catastrophic results. We're seeing a push for that regulation, right?
We are. In 2025, state lawmakers across the U.S. have proposed hundreds of new bills focusing on AI regulation. They're looking at everything from chatbots to healthcare AI, trying to clarify where the liability lies. Think of liability as the legal responsibility. When a car has a faulty part and causes an accident, the car company is liable. But when an AI makes a bad decision, who is liable? Is it the company that made the AI, the company that used it, or the individual who accepted the AI's recommendation? The answer is not always clear. And it's not just the U.S. UNESCO has its own set of principles for the ethics of AI, and its recommendation on the ethics of artificial intelligence emphasizes things like human oversight, transparency, and accountability. It's a collective effort to ensure that we never cede ultimate responsibility to a machine.
We can't just throw our hands up and say, the AI did it.
Exactly. The responsibility always falls back on the human. But what does that look like in practice? Transparency means being open and clear about how the AI works. It's like a car company providing a detailed user manual and a list of all the parts. You should know what data was used to train a model. You should be able to see the why behind its decisions. Human oversight means having a human expert in the loop to review the most critical decisions that an AI makes. For instance, in a medical context, an AI might analyze a patient's CT scan and suggest a diagnosis, but the final decision is always made by a human doctor. In a hiring process, the AI can be used to filter 1,000 resumes down to 100, but a human recruiter must review that final list before making a decision. This isn't about distrusting the AI. It's about acknowledging its limitations and leveraging its strengths while maintaining human oversight. And accountability means that if something goes wrong, someone is held responsible. It's about having a clear chain of command and responsibility, even when a machine is involved. As Roy Akerman, the VP of Identity Security Strategy at Silverfort, recently said, as AI systems become more embedded in our digital infrastructure, the stakes rise. Trust must be earned, not assumed. That's why enforceable, transparent frameworks are essential, not just to guide innovation, but to ensure it's grounded in accountability and resilience. He's saying that trust is built on transparency, not on a blind belief that the AI will always work.
So, if the problem is that AI is just a mirror reflecting our biases back at us, then the solution must be to make the reflection better. What are some of the ways that we can do that?
The most important thing we can do is implement a human-in-the-loop approach. Now, this phrase might sound a little techy, but it's actually a very simple idea. Imagine you're a pilot flying a plane. You rely on the autopilot, a sophisticated AI, to handle the long, tedious parts of the flight. The autopilot keeps the plane on course, adjusts for turbulence, and manages fuel efficiency with incredible precision. But you, the pilot, are always in the cockpit, awake and alert, with your hands on the controls. You could take over at a moment's notice if something unexpected happens. The AI is a fantastic co-pilot, but you are the ultimate authority. You are the human in the loop. This model is being adopted in everything from finance to healthcare. For example, a medical AI might analyze a CT scan to look for signs of a tumor. The AI is incredibly fast and can spot things a human eye might miss. It can flag a tiny, suspicious shadow in the scan, but it's not infallible. It might flag a shadow that is just a harmless anomaly. So the AI provides a recommendation, hey, check this spot out. But the human radiologist, with their years of experience and training, makes the final diagnosis. This isn't about distrusting the AI. It's about acknowledging its limitations and leveraging its strengths while maintaining human oversight. It's about using the AI to make us better and faster, not to replace us entirely. Another example is in self-driving cars. The AI does the vast majority of the driving. But in some systems, a human driver must remain alert and ready to take over. If the car encounters a complex, chaotic situation, like a sudden road closure or a confusing intersection with a police officer directing traffic in an unexpected way, the AI can hand the controls back to the human driver. The human in the loop ensures that we have a safety net, a final layer of judgment and intuition that the AI simply doesn't possess.
It's the co-pilot model, you know, not the autopilot.
Exactly. We need to remember that AI is a tool, not a replacement for human intelligence or morality. It can help us process vast amounts of data at superhuman speed, but it lacks empathy, lived experience, and common sense. As Nate Barad, the VP of Product Marketing at Algolia, put it, AI has tremendous potential to fix fundamental problems this industry has kicked down the road for decades. It's taking on everyday speed bumps that delay care and frustrate everyone, like prior authorizations that take 7 days when they should take 7 minutes. He's talking about using AI to solve the boring, broken stuff, not to make life or death decisions on its own. It's about empowering humans, not replacing them.
I love that. And I think that's such a hopeful way to look at it. We're not at the mercy of the machines. We are, you know, still in control. The ghosts are just being the lingering remnants of our own past failures. And it's our job to clean up the data and create a better future.
That's the perfect way to put it, JR. We are the ones who can exercise these digital ghosts. We just have to be willing to look at the flaws in ourselves and the data we create.
That is a powerful and very fitting note to end on. Dr. Lena Varga, thank you so much for being here today and for sharing your incredible insights with us. This conversation has been both enlightening and, in its own way, reassuring. I feel like I understand the digital hauntings a little bit better now.
It was an absolute pleasure, JR, and I'm always happy to help demystify the magic behind the machine.
And that brings us to the end of our second episode, The Haunted Server. We've tackled the invisible forces of data bias, looked at the historical roots of digital sabotage, and talked about what it means to take responsibility for our digital creations. Join us next week for our next episode in the series, The Uncanny Valley of the Dolls. We'll be moving from the intangible ghost in our servers to the physical manifestations of AI. We'll talk about humanoid robots, hyper-realistic avatars, and the psychological discomfort they can cause. We'll explore the line where technology becomes so realistic that it's almost human. But not quite. You won't want to miss this.
And with that, we've come to the end of another episode of AI Innovations Unleashed. This week, we've learned all about why an AI might act weird because it just has a poor diet of bad data. And I think that's a lesson for us all, really. I, for one, am on a new data diet. Why did the AI get a job as a baker? Because it could make adoable errors. Don't just sit there, human. If you enjoyed this journey into the digital darkness, be sure to hit that subscribe button on your favorite podcast app so you never miss a beat. Leave us a 5-star review and a witty comment about your own digital ghosts because we absolutely love to hear from you. And if this episode gave you a shiver or a good laugh, share it with a friend who might also be curious about what's haunting their devices. You can find us on all the major social media platforms and at our website, AIinnovationsunleashed.com. Until next time, be sure to rate, review, subscribe, and share this episode with a friend.
And remember, AI is here to stay, so don't get spooked. Get smart.